Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. If you're new to our podcast, I encourage you to go back and listen to some of our previous guests. We have some great guests that are coming up in the next few months. And this week, we're going to revisit a conversation that we had with Diane Honda. Diane is the Chief Administrative Officer at Barracuda Networks, and she is also the General Counsel and heads the HR function for the company. She has just an interesting background, and she's going to share lessons learned in her career. Looking forward to this week's conversation with Diane. Yes, first off, Diane, can you give us just a little bit of overview of your career and a little bit of your story?
Sure, of course. So I started my career as a software engineer at Hewlett-Packard Company right after graduating Carnegie Mellon with degrees in computer science and business. And I always knew that I would stay in business and technology. And I took advantage of an opportunity to attend Santa Clara Law School and focus on technology and the law, because I wanted to build the skills to be a C-suite leader in a technology company. So I've had the pleasure to have positions in engineering, business operations, channel marketing, and legal. And my first leadership role was as a general counsel, and I now serve as Chief Administrative Officer for Barracuda, which includes our legal, human resources, compliance, and facilities functions. I also serve or have served on several nonprofit and governing boards, and I look forward to serving on corporate boards as I further expand my career.
Great. Well, tell us a little bit about your company and what you do.
So Barracuda is a cybersecurity company. We have solutions for email protection, anti-phishing training and education for employees, network and application security, which includes firewalls, web application firewalls, and a whole suite of products that are really designed for small and medium-sized businesses to have one company that they can look to help protect their network and their systems from the ever-growing and ever-changing cyber threats that are out there. Barracuda has over 220,000 customers worldwide, and we have grown over the years, being public at one point, going private a few years back, and throughout just continually focusing on our customers, our partners, and really that mission of making sure that we protect them through their entire business journey for life, for their applications and their data and their networks.
Okay. And that's a current event this week with all that's going on with cybersecurity. And it's definitely at the top of everybody's mind right now. One of the questions I love to ask guests, if they were able to spin back time, knowing what they know now, what advice would you give a 22-year-old Diane as she was entering her career?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, I think as I look back to my younger self, I think the advice I would give myself is to really take the time to build strong and broad relationships, to really be present in conversations and get to know what motivates and inspires others. When I was young in my career, you know, I was so focused on doing a good job with the tasks and project I was given that I really just focused on that. And I am sure that I missed opportunities to get the best results possible because I didn't leverage the full strength of the team. You know, and understanding this over time has really helped me to understand the difference between management and leadership. I would say also earlier in my career, I really focused on more managing than leading. And, you know, both are important. But you can't elevate yourself in an organization and quickly scale a business if you focus most of your time on managing day to day and not developing leaders.
So I want to get back to the subject as far as developing leaders, but is there, I guess the follow-up question to that question is, any advice you received early on that you wish you would have ignored?
Yeah, you know, I think, again, as you kind of look back and you think what you would have done differently, right? I think I just had this fear of failing when I was younger. And I think if you if you're so careful never to fail, then you're probably never taking the right risks and really challenging and pushing the envelope. And so, you know, while I never want to, and I'm sure any successful leader doesn't want to fail, avoiding failure at all cost isn't the right thing to do either. I recall we had a project that we were so overly invested in, and because of it, it needed to succeed. But, you know, it probably should have been canceled long before, but just the investment and the fear of failing kept it alive. And, you know, by the time it was delivered, it really wasn't needed any longer. And I think if I could look back on the advice about, you know, really kind of pushing through and being afraid to fail would be, well, then fail fast to, you know, quickly try to, you know, go after new things. And if it feels like it's the wrong path, then be open-minded at all times. And if the wind is shifting, then to, you know, make the adjustments you need to, even if it means sort of abandoning the plan. And, you know, the other thing I realized, you know, again, as I got older and lived through different experiences, that my personal greatest learnings have come through the toughest situations. When I've dealt with really messy customer or vendor situations or litigations, I've realized how we could have done a better job up front, either setting expectations or anticipating different scenarios to avoid or minimize the issues. So, you know, even when the outcome wasn't what we expected or wanted, you know, there is a positive in that you can learn from it and know how to set a better path going forward.
That's great, great advice. So someone coming in, and we have a number of people listen to this podcast that are either first-time leaders or they're new CEOs. Thinking back to that first team that you led and that you had responsibility for, What advice would you wish you would have had prior to leading a group of people?
Yeah, I think the advice I wish someone would have told me, but I think, you know, I think pretty much everybody, it seems so intuitive too, is to just make sure that you hire great people, you know, to surround yourself with individuals that you can continually learn from and who inspire the people around them with their abilities and actions. You know, at all levels of the organization and in all roles, it is really about the people. And, you know, I was promoted into a management role fairly quickly in my career. And I thought that meant that you needed to really know all the answers. And, you know, what I've learned, and I would tell a new leader, is to hire people that fill your personal blind spots and that will expand the overall knowledge of the organization. You know, a recent example that kind of reminds me of kind of how important this is we recently hired a new attorney for our team, and we had several really strong candidates. And it was something that our VP of Risk and Compliance said that really stood out to me. His comment on one candidate was that the candidate was really good, but that our team was great and that we should keep looking to find someone as great as the rest of the team. And it was both inspiring and heartwarming to realize how highly he thought of his peers and respected what they bring to the company every day. And, you know, he was right. We actually were able to find someone great, and we hired that person. And it was the reminder that we needed in that moment about the importance of finding the right people on your team and just continually increasing and expanding the capabilities that you have.
So as you're evaluating people that you're hiring and bringing on to your team, and I know culture is an important part of that, do they fit the culture? Talk a little bit about that and how you, I think sometimes you inherit a culture, and sometimes you have to try to change that within a group of people maybe that have worked together for a while. But talk a little bit about the importance of that and hiring with that in mind.
Yeah, I've always actually felt that you can train people on technical skills. You can't train them on that soft customer service or just the orientation and kind of how they feel about and treat people. It's just an innate sort of skill that I think is developed over time. You can always improve upon it, but I think there's just something that really sets different personalities and different people apart. And at Barracuda, our culture is super important to us, you know, and one of the things that I try to focus on across all of the teams I manage is that we are a service organization to the rest of the business. So my legal team is a service organization, right? We are here to help the business grow. My HR team is a service organization. So I think the most important piece of the culture for the team I manage is really that service orientation. And so we look for that when we're hiring people. you can, again, train some of that service orientation. But I think if you find someone that has it, you just know it. And it's pretty magical when you see that person through the interview process and then come in and just immediately, you know, are able to collaborate and just make a huge impact just in how they go about approaching the people that they work with. So for me, it's really a culture of service on my team. And then, as you know, Barracuda as a whole, we really do try to have a very collaborative, succeed together type of a culture. And so we really do need to look for that and hire for that, because it's not a company that you want to come into if that's not how you view the contribution you want to make.
We had talked earlier about the whole idea of celebration, that is the importance of that. And I think, you know, looking back on this past year, I think a lot of people have been worn out just with everything going on and, you know, with COVID and that. But talk a little bit about your perspective around that as far as you're leading the importance of celebration.
You know, it is really important to celebrate the victories wherever they are, big or small. And, you know, I think almost like every company, we did a lot of happy hours. We did a lot of Zoom events that we could try to really recognize people. We did a company-wide hackathon where we invited people, not just from engineering, but from all of our different business organizations to participate, to really focus on accomplishment and get people out of that day-to-day sort of, you know, task-by-task mentality that I feel like Zoom and working from home has kind of thrown us all into. So we really, you know, made opportunities to innovate and to do things differently and to have fun with each other and to be able to celebrate successes despite all of the challenges that the pandemic brought for all of us, you know, keeping that short-term focus, but also allowing, you know, people to think about the future and the broader things and to really make sure that culturally we acknowledge what we were doing, you know, for each other and then as a business for our customers and partners.
So, having gone through this past year, what do you project as far as kind of coming out of COVID and things are in some parts of the country are loosening up more than others? But what do you see changing in the workplace? And maybe what things do you think will continue to be true as far as from the changes that we've made in the past year?
Yeah, I wish I had the crystal ball to explain exactly what all will be different in the future. But I think that from everyone that we've talked to, there seems to be a pretty broad range of perspectives on what the world will look like post-COVID, right? There are some people, I think, that have worked from home and never want to go back to the office, although from, you know, what we believe, who we've talked to, that that's probably the smaller percentage. And then there's the group of people that can't wait to get back in the office. And we've had our offices open for a while at Barracuda. In fact, we do our manufacturing in San Jose, California. And so we've had a manufacturing team working all through COVID, trying to keep them safe and change the protocols. So we've never really gone all remote through this process. And we get a lot of feedback that people want to come back to the office as well. And then, you know, there's those in the middle, right, that want to come in sometimes because they really miss that personal collaboration and engagement. But, you know, they also see the value and ability to work from home. So I think that the way that people treat the office and think about it will be different. I also think the digitalization and the fact that we have just leapfrogged years in terms of advancement, in terms of how we're able to communicate and work effectively through all the digital tools that we have, that has changed and that's here to stay. And, you know, one of my personal passions and one of the organizations that I volunteered with for many years was a public school board. And, you know, the transformation in education, you know, would never have happened to the degree that it's happened. And I think it's really amazing because now that we can incorporate these technologies and tools into our curriculum and into our schools and really have a much broader reach and individualize how we view it is just tremendous, right? So I feel like that whole digitalization has changed not just the business world, but it's actually changed and hopefully will continue to change our education system as we go forward. And I think, you know, you can always find a silver lining. And I think that is part of the silver lining that you can find through this whole pandemic.
So you're in a technology company. You've got a background in technology. Are there any apps that you can't live without or technology that's made you more productive?
Yeah, there's several of them. You know, I love my iPhone and being able to work from anywhere as a working mom. That has given me just a tremendous sense of freedom that that I'm sure any working mother would appreciate. You know, the one tool that I would say when it came out that really just sort of was like transformational was e-signatures, right? As a legal professional at the time, I remember trying to, you know, mail paper back and forth. I remember PDFs and trying to get people to sign that. And, you know, when signature tools like SignNow and HelloSign came out and we could just go on our phone with our app and get everything signed, I remember walking over to several of our executives at Barracuda and literally installing it on their iPhones for them just to make my life easier. So, and I think it transformed their lives as well. So I think, you know, in general, just that whole, it goes back to that whole digitalization, right? Once you get something that really empowers you to be more effective and efficient, then there's just no going back. And that was just one example of how it just fundamentally changed how quickly and easily we could all do our jobs.
So I know as an executive, you continue to have to stay on top of the trends and things that are going on in the marketplace. How do you stay current as far as on just all that's changing? And you've got a lot of different areas with the legal side as well as HR that is constantly changing. How do you stay current?
Yeah, I think it's probably two things that you do, and I'm sure there's others out there as well. But I try to read every newsletter, every email that I can get just to really kind of see what's happening and the topics that keep coming up through the various materials that I have that I read. And then the other thing is I attend very selectively sort of key webinars and seminars on topics that allow me to really keep current in it. And so those are probably the two things. And I think the third thing is that I'm never shy about asking, you know, another expert, you know, for their advice and thoughts on it. And so I feel, you know, really grateful for people that will take the time to, you know, explain things and talk to me about topics. And so I try to give back and I try to ask. And I feel like one of the things that you really have to do to stay current is to talk to people and understand where they're at and the problems that they're facing and how they've handled it. So I think it's just a combination of, you know, reading the material that you get, really focusing on those seminars that you can get a lot out of, and then leveraging the, you know, the expertise that's out there and taking advantage of it.
So any favorite quotes that I think are inspiring or that have made an impact on you?
You know, yeah, I actually am someone who keeps a list of quotes. Okay. As I read them and I come across them, I just kind of file them away in a file on my iPhone, and at different times actually look at the different quotes, because depending upon where things are at, certain ones have more significance than others.
Sure.
And one that I've gone back to a few times this past year, and which has just stood out to me now, given everything of this past year, is a quote that is, "Now and then, it is good to pause in our pursuit of happiness and just be happy." And it's such a simple quote, but to me, it's yet so profound, because we're all so busy racing to our next event, meeting, job, that sometimes you just forget to realize what you actually have in front of us right now. And I use this quote, you know, when I'm sort of harried, just to pause and take a breath and be thankful. And, you know, I realize that I and other leaders want to always do more and accomplish more. And sometimes it's just really important to focus on the tremendous ability that you can make an impact with what you have now, where you are now. Mm. And, you know, the other thing is that I think that quote also just reminds me that this past year has shown us to be really appreciative of what we have, because there are so many things that we can't control. And, you know, while there were negatives, right, in the pandemic that everybody faced, and, you know, I think hopefully none of us ever have to repeat some of these things again, but there were also some positives. And I think that, again, you just have to really take a breath and think about controlling what you can control and some of the positive things that came out of it, and not always be chasing, you know, for that next thing and just kind of missing what you're experiencing along the way. So that quote just has meaning to me.
Yeah, that's a great quote, and definitely, I think to be thankful and to have that sense of pausing to not be focusing just on the problems you have, but what you have to be thankful for. I know giving back is a part of who you are, and I was looked at originally when we were introduced. I looked at your kind of your background, see that you're involved with a nonprofit that's giving back, and it's called Java Joy. Could you talk a little bit about that and just kind of how you got involved and just what they do? I'd love to hear about the organization.
Sure. It's a privilege for me to serve on the Java Joy board. And we got introduced to this organization at Barracuda through one of our employees in Alpharetta, Georgia. We actually had our worldwide sales kickoff there. He was affiliated with the organization. He invited them to come and attend the event, and they made such an impact on our employees and the guests that we had there that we stayed connected with the organization. And, you know, what Java Joy does is it is a nonprofit organization, and it is dedicated to providing education and employment opportunities for young adults with disabilities. And, you know, it's in the process of expanding nationally. It's in 4 cities right now, but I think over the next few years, we would love to expand into other cities and communities so that the mutual benefit can be experienced more broadly. I think COVID slowed us down a little bit.
Sure.
In part because, you know, their engagement is really an in-person engagement. It's bringing coffee and smiles and hugs and just joy to the organization. And it allows the extra special individuals that it employs to go out into the community, to be included, to show that people of all abilities can make a huge impact. And it's just a mutual learning that occurs, right? How does a person with a disability really engage and accomplish and have an opportunity to work? Because so many of them want to work, but the opportunities are so narrow. So this organization has a great goal of being the largest employer of adults with disabilities. And so for me, that stretch objective is just really inspiring. And I believe we can make it because of the people in the organization. And just because whenever we've gone and talked to people, they're so embracing of wanting to give people with disabilities the opportunity. And this is a way to do that. And I also will say that I've watch the people at Barracuda interact, and it breaks a barrier that I think people have when they see someone with a disability. This is hesitation, and yet just the experience of spending time with them has really just broken through that, and you see these connections that are just beautiful to watch. So it's just an organization that, you know, is near and dear to my heart. I have a special needs nephew that I have grown up with all of his life, and so I really appreciate what the organization is trying to do. And like I said, I'm very proud to be affiliated with it.
Yeah, great. I watched some of the videos about the organization, and they have a great mission. And if somebody would want to learn more about it, maybe, you know, look at, you know, helping as far as expansion, how would they find out?
Yeah, just go to Java Joy's website, JAVAJOY. And you can look at the communities we're in. And if you reach out and talk to any of the employees there, certainly they'll help. They can also reach out to me on my LinkedIn, and I'd be happy to connect them with the right people, either to just do an event, even if you're a school or a church or a business, and you just want to have them come in for an event when we can all be together in person. But even still, now they're doing virtual events. They've adapted just like the rest of us have. And so, you know, you can just host an event and just see the power of what it can be to be inclusive in this environment.
Great. So outside of work, Diane, what do you do to recharge?
So I am an avid swimmer. I'm not a great swimmer, but I'm very dedicated to the cause. You know, I realized I'm really an introvert. And so the time alone just in the pool to think and just kind of go through things has just been super relaxing to me. The other thing that I do to relax is I play classical violin, and I played with the community orchestra for many years, but with COVID, we've all been sort of, you know, scattered. So hopefully we'll be able to get back together soon. And then, you know, I do other volunteer work as well. And I guess, you know, the final thing is, you know, as a mother of two girls, I spend a lot of time with them and, you know, try to be an active part of their life as well.
So any parting advice that you would give to a new or up and coming leader?
You know, I think it's really important to be a lifelong learner, to always try to continue to expand your knowledge and to always surround yourself with people that are going to challenge you and force you to think differently. You know, different perspectives generally are needed to make the best decision possible. And I think you have to embrace that, learning from other people to understand the perspectives that they have. I think the other thing that's really important is just having the courage to speak up and to find a way to sometimes put that topic or that perspective on the table that everybody might be thinking, but is always a little bit afraid and hesitant to do it. And to learn to basically put that out there in a way that keeps the dialogue going as opposed to shutting it down. So I think those are really important. And I think the other thing is just, you can sort of tell from my, you know, volunteer activities, I just think it's really important to be inclusive and to, you know, embrace all of the different abilities and capabilities of people and try to create opportunity. That's what, you know, Java Joy is about. That was what, you know, I spent years on a public school board, really trying to increase opportunity. And I think everybody should be mindful of making sure that we make room and we look for ways to make opportunities for everyone that has the ability to contribute.
Well, thank you, Diane. This has been a lot of fun to hear your story and your thoughts. And I know this is going to be helpful for those that listen, and look forward to seeing as you continue in your career and all of your other ventures and nonprofit work that you're doing, and definitely wish you continued success.
Thank you. And thank you for having me today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.